Shabbat Shalom. It really is nice to see you here today. I was saying earlier that coming from last weekend where we had people fly in from all over from the United States and even Canada, thank you to Derek and Anna for the great surprise. My heart dropped in a good way when they walked in the door. It truly is great when you can fellowship one with another. You know, so many times I think in the Torah movement, people, because it's prophetic, we're going to talk about that a little bit today, because people are literally waking up and they're scattered. See, that's what Scripture says is going to happen. Zechariah the prophet says, they will remember me in far off places. So that's what's happening. People literally all over are beginning to wake up to something quite incredible. Listen, it's a move of God. So I am pleased and honored and humbled to be standing in the place that I'm standing, not just physically, although it's a beautiful place, but I truly, truly am honored to have an opportunity to share what I think is the message for our time. Today, we begin again. We begin again at the beginning. Where else would you begin, right? So, but I wanted to say just a couple of words in the form of announcements, if you will, just for those of you who might be living under a rock somewhere and you might not know this. This officially is the beginning of a joint effort that we feel is quite significant. For many years, although I've been associated with United Israel and I've been ordained with United Israel since 2003, it's something new, something exciting, something fresh in that James Tabor and I and the other board members have worked together very closely and very diligently over the past several months to bring together into one concerted effort this idea that we would go forward with, a clarion call. If you heard James last week, he talked about the message that is to go forth. So I'm very pleased. This is the first official Sabbath of our new joint effort coming out of last weekend, which was sort of an inaugural kind of a kick it off. But this is the first official week. It's been many weeks since I've taught consistently. Jehovah willing, that is to change today. In other words, we don't know what tomorrow holds. But for me, as far as I'm concerned, if it is His will, I will teach on a regular basis, either from here or Dave, from the desert of Israel, right? So Dave and I might, according to plan, we've already purchased our tickets, so hopefully this works. We're going to fly December the 9th to the land of Israel. We'll be picked up and rushed to a desert location where we will spend 21 days in the desert of Israel. We're going to be doing some work over there. We're going to be praying, and above all, I have to tell you this, even though it might sound strange, not to you people, because you people believe in Scripture, I'm going to be praying for the voice. I'm going to be praying to hear the voice. Isaiah 40. Isaiah 40 says, Nachamu, Nachamu, Ami, comfort ye my people. Immediately thereafter, it talks about this. It says, a voice is crying in the wilderness. I want to hear that voice. The language is very specific in the Hebrew. In other words, it doesn't say a voice cried, because that would indicate past tense. It doesn't say a voice will cry in the sense that it's future. It says a voice cries, a voice is crying. I'm going to spend with Dave, my closest associate, time in the wilderness. We're going to be working the land. We're going to be praying. We might even be planting things in the soil, but above all, we are there for that main reason, to ensure that we are following God's way. Dave and I work together very closely on a lot of projects. We have to make sure that we've got this right. So we're going to be looking for guidance and direction, and I ask that you pray for us while we're over there. But in the meantime, we're going to be meeting here, according to our plan, every Shabbat, and probably quite a bit more than that. You just never know. If you're not following us on Facebook and the social media, you need to try to keep up, because this is my full-time gig. Dave has to remind me, Ross, the rest of us have jobs. We can't read everything you post every hour of the day. But try to keep up, because I might go live from the grocery store. Who knows? But the idea, though, is that even when we're in the desert, we have better internet in the desert of Israel than I have here, honestly. So that's our goal. So that's why I had to bring Dave. Not only do I love Dave, but I have to bring him because he's going to be my technical guy. I'm going to give him a shoestring and a tin can and say, I've got to reach Canada and Israel and all over the world. And he's got to figure that out. You have a tough job, Dave. One other thing is that Glenn Chatterton, as you know, we ordained Glenn and sent him forth. United Israel allows us, encourages us to appoint and install the necessary teachers. And as you know, Glenn has been a faithful associate of ours for many, many years through the providence of God. He and his family are moving to Michigan. As it turns out, this is strange. Strange are the workings of heaven. There are two ladies that I know personally who listen in weekly, Nan and Grace, who live in the town where Glenn is moving. So what are the chances of that? So we're going to pray that Glenn, once he's on a 15-hour drive today, he's got to get there to start work Monday, but we're going to pray that those people begin to assemble. There's something about coming together. I encourage you to do it, but we'll talk more about that. One more thing. See, I keep thinking of things. This is a good thing about not taking good notes. My daughter, Callie, is having contractions. Now, some of you have given up on the fact that she is going to have a baby. She is going to have a baby. This will be our fifth grandchild, second granddaughter, both from Callie. So she is approaching that place where, you know, there's a difference in when you think you're in labor and when you're in labor. This feels more like labor to her. You don't know what I'm talking about, do you, John? But she said, okay, today might be the day. So I'm excited about that. And so after today's class, I hope to get there just in time and be there for the birth of my second granddaughter, Natalie. So keep them in your prayers. I'm talking to you today about new beginnings. I want you to fall in love with Jehovah more than you ever have. I want you and me to feel His presence in our daily walk. I want you to reach a place. Literally hear a voice behind you saying, this is the way, walk therein. What a wonderful world it will be when the people of God are guided literally into which way we should go. This is my prayer. Every event in my life, especially these last few months that would turn some people upside down, all I'm doing is saying, I'm ready. What's next? What's next? What's next? Because I sense that we are living in exciting times. People are distracted by all sorts of things in the political world and in the news and in so forth. Listen, don't get distracted. Don't get distracted. Keep your focus on Yah, Jehovah. It's in Him that you place your trust. We should be seeking Him daily. Now listen, in order to do that, we have to internalize what are His instructions. We need to internalize instructions. Imagine this. If you get something in the mail that you have to put together, how many of you, John, don't put your hand up. I know you do this. I do that. Well, you're kind of engineerish. You might. But most people don't follow instructions very well. We tend to try to do things in our own way. But see, the Bible says, don't do it with this. There is a way that seems right to man. The end thereof is destruction. We want to be guided in our daily pursuits by the Creator and His ways. See, His ways are higher than our ways. His thoughts higher than our thoughts. We must, in order to be the fullness that God intended us to be, we must find ourselves in concert with His instructions. Now, the world doesn't believe this. Well, I'm in the world. Someone said this one time. I'm in the world, but I'm not part of the world system. See? What I want you to realize is that neither are you. So we need to know what it is that God has for us in our daily activities. What should we eat? What calendar should we follow? What people should we associate with? All of these things are crucial to us becoming what God intended. See, we're talking about beginnings. We're going to go through, we're going to talk more about the Torah in just a few minutes, but we're talking about Torah now. God created us for something quite incredible. You're going to realize as we work through these initial sections of the Torah, you're going to realize the greatness that we are to be. Now look, some people say, oh, I don't like that. We're not supposed to talk about the greatness of man. Well, let me tell you who does. Jehovah, right? We are created in His image. We should seek to follow His ways. So when we talk about in beginning, in getting started, you're going to see that what is going forth beginning today, it's going to be evident that we're doing something different. There are a lot of places out there who are teaching. And look, I pray for those teachers. Because many times, though they may not agree with me theologically or doctrinally, you know what? People are in the place that God has them. And God is going to use some incredible things. We might look at the things that they're learning and say, psh, it's nothing. I was there 20 years ago. Guess what? We were there 20 years ago. Why are we where we are? It's by the grace of God. So we need to pray for those teachers, but I'm also praying that those teachers have that veil that the prophet says, Isaiah says that there's a veil that's cast over the nations. Take it down. I want that veil lifted. I want people's eyes opened and their spirits in tuned. I want them to be lifted. I want people to be as happy as I am, and I'm happy. I want people to be full of joy, and it's because we follow the instructions. So here is lesson number one. Lesson number one. From now on, if you can help it, rather than think of, look, Dave, I'm moving towards the dry erase board, sorry. Instead of, we're talking about Torah. Now, most of you know this, but here's my job as a teacher. I say it again until you really, really know it. Torah does not equal, is it this way or the other way? Does not equal law. Does not equal law. Torah, let's do this in a green because green symbolizes life. Torah, can you see that okay on the screen? Equals instruction. Now let me tell you something. We need instructions, and the Torah provides those instructions. What I want you to get is that I am teaching you the instructions. Now, when Moses went into the promised land with the children of Israel, Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 5, it says that Moses set out to, in Hebrew it says, to make plain the instructions, to make plain. Now, there are a lot of teachers out there that want to get real mystical and deep, and I'm going to show you the greatest secrets of the Bible, like, did Moses, they want to know where Cain got his wife from and all these things. In other words, people focus on what the Bible doesn't say, right? A lot of people want to focus there. Here's where I want to focus. I want to focus on what it does say. Now, in order for me to share with you what it does say, guess who has to know what it says? Well, I do. I mean, I have to spend my time. I have to invest my time to gain knowledge, pray for understanding so that I can impart wisdom. Doesn't mean I'm any better than anybody. It just means I've invested the time, prayed about, and I hope to invest in you the wisdom to impart. I want to impart the wisdom to understand the teaching, the instruction. Torah equals instruction. Now, when I say Torah, I'm also talking about the five books of Moses, Genesis 1:1 through Deuteronomy chapter 34. So I'm talking about that wonderful body of literature. Today's sort of going to be like a pep rally introduction to this. You can share it with your friends who don't know about Torah. See, there are a lot of people who've been lied to about Torah. What I want to do is give you some things from the Scripture so that you can go to them and say, no, no, no. No, the Torah is, and you'll have some things in your arsenal, so to speak. So, what I want people to understand, though, is that as I teach you these things today in the introduction, I'm setting you up for what is going to be probably, as long as Jehovah allows me to speak, this cycle of reading takes about 3.5 years. It's like a college education here, right? So if we're all still working together at the end of it, I'll give you a diploma. Well, I don't know what it's going to be worth, but I mean, might not be able to do anything with it, but you can sure be proud of it because you will have invested the time in learning God's ways. Listen, there is nothing more important in your life than to invest in learning to follow God's ways. Now, it's going to be different than the world. I promise you that. Okay. I want you to open with me this morning. Some of these passages you will know, but in the sequence that I've prayed about and that I've recorded in my notes, I think it's significant. I think it's important for you to get it. Malachi, the book of Malachi. Malachi means my messenger. Now, who would love to hear a word from Jehovah's messenger this morning? That's what we're here for. Malachi in Malachi. Now, in the Hebrew, it's chapter 3, verse 22. Now, I've received so many notes the last few weeks that said, hey, when you start again, could you go slower on the verses? And in my mind, I say, I should and I'll try. Some of these books are pretty small. They're hard to find, right? So Malachi, if you're in an English Bible, it's the last book of the Hebrew Scriptures. If you're in the Hebrew Bible, it's in a grouping called the 12. Sometimes referred to as the Minor Prophets. And it ends that book. It is, in many ways, not only its placement in Scripture, but in chronology, it takes the place of the final word. The last thing that a prophet says, basically, in the Hebrew Scriptures is this. Remember, verse 22. Now, the verses are different in English, so I think it's chapter 4. Someone online can help me out. Chapter 4, maybe verse 5. I can't remember. 4, verse 4. 4, verse 4. Check me. 4, 4. It says, remember the teaching or the Torah of Moses, my servant. Now, think about this. The last thing we get in the form of a prophetic message is remember the Torah of Moses. Now listen, if God had intended for us to forget it, I would bet that He wouldn't give us this the last thing. The last thing you tell somebody in your life or in your encounter with someone, you want them to remember, you want to give them something to leave with, right? Here it is. Remember the instruction of Moses, my servant, which I commanded him in Horeb for all Israel, both statutes and judgments. Remember the teaching of Moses, the Torah of Moses, my servant, which I commanded him in Horeb for all Israel, both statutes and judgment. Not another Torah. It's the one that I gave to Moses. Where, Lord? You know, at Horeb. Statutes and judgments. So I want you to remember that you are to remember the teaching or instruction of Moses. Very important. So put that in your notes. Now, why would I invest the past 2.5 decades? Why would I encourage you to invest the next 3.5+ years of your life to working through a document called by the world the law? Like, you know what some people would say? Oh, honey, you're getting under the law. I'm going to tell you, no, you're getting in the instructions. You've lived your life. Now, guess what? You're going to read the instruction, because you know what we've done? We've screwed up. Generally, people will go to the instructions after they've screwed it up. They go, where did I mess up? This is what this is about. Let me tell you something about the Torah. It is the most incredible, powerful, single most significant thing that you can invest your time in, because it's what God gave us to guide us in our daily activities. Now, some people would say, well, I know I've heard from God and I've never heard the word Torah. Okay, well, guess what? You will really, really be in a place, once you're aligned with God's instructions, to be more in compliance with what it is that God asked from you. Why would you not? Okay, now, the Torah. Here are some passages that I want you to put in your notes. Go to Psalm 119, please. Psalm 119. Now, I'm going to tell you a little bit about Psalm 119 while we go there. Psalm 119 is referred to as an acrostic. This particular psalm consists of 22 sections comprised of 8 stanzas each. I can feel that I might go for 6 hours today, so get comfortable. 22 sections. Now, the number 22 is very significant. It is the number of perfection in many ways. The Book of Jubilees, copies of which were found at the Dead Sea Scroll, talk about this, right? You can look this up. Look up Book of Jubilees, number 22, because it tells about how there are 22 acts of creation. We're going to study those today. 22 acts of creation. Talks about there are 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet. Did you know this? That when the Hebrew Bible was first, let's call it canonized, because that's a term most people understand, in its original organization, it consisted of 22 books. Now, the standard Old Testament, as we refer to it in our culture, has 39, but it's because the numbering is different. So, for instance, I just mentioned the 12 minor prophets, Hosea, Joel, Amos, Nahum, Micah, you know, that consists of 12. In the Hebrew organization, that's one, right? So you have to understand that there's a same material. 22 is significant. So Psalm 119 has 22 sections consisting of 8 stanzas each. Now, in section 1, the 8 passages begin with the Hebrew letter Aleph. The next 8 begin with the Hebrew letter Beit. In other words, it's working through the alphabet, the Hebrew alphabet. Now, if you have most English standard translations, you can learn your Hebrew alphabet in a good old King James Bible if you just go through Psalm 119. It lists the alphabet in order. By the way, you need to do that because we're going to be teaching Hebrew from this place. I'm going to open it up. We're going to figure out a way to do it online so people that aren't here can do it. And look. You know, James and I are kind of easy with this. We want people to be able to join us and do this at no cost. There's not a charge. There is a cost we have to pay, but you get what I'm saying. We want people to learn. Now, Psalm 119 is beautiful. It's the longest chapter, as we say, in the entire Hebrew Bible. And it's all about extolling, guess what? The Torah. 18 times in Psalm 119, David talks about his love for and delight in the Torah. Now look at, we could read the whole thing, but we're not going to right now. If you look at verse 142, Psalm 119, verse 142, just because I want you to get this in your notes, it says, Thy righteousness is an everlasting righteousness, and thy Torah is truth. Thy Torah is truth. Look, if a lot of teachers aren't telling the truth, that's a fact. If I, of my own self, begin to testify whatever's on my mind, that may or may not be true. But let me tell you this. If I'm talking Torah, that's truth. Emet. The psalmist says, let truth spring forth from the earth. Look, every day I pray that truth springs forth. People all over the place are going, I think I need to keep this. That's God working in our world today. Torah is truth. Now, if you look, I want you to go with me to Psalm 1. Go back to Psalm 1. Very important passages as we embark on our new and exciting journey. In Psalm 1, very, very beautiful psalm. It says this. Blessed. How many of us want to be blessed? Blessed is the man. Now, this is a generic term. It doesn't say blessed is the Jew, blessed is the Israelite. It says blessed is the man. Blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked, nor stand in the way of sinners, nor sit in the seat of scorners. But listen to this. But his delight is in the Torah of Jehovah. And in his Torah, he meditates day and night. Listen, he shall be like a tree planted by streams of water that brings forth its fruit in its season. Its leaf also shall not wither, and in whatever he does, he shall prosper. Now, compare that to this. Not so with the wicked. Not so with the wicked. They are like the chaff which the wind drives away. Therefore, the wicked shall not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. For Jehovah knows the ways of the righteous, but the way of the wicked shall perish. That's good news. You talk about gospel? This is gospel. That's good news. Blessed is the one who doesn't sit in the seat of the scornful. His delight is in the Torah of Jehovah. If I could give you one thing, if I could just like pour it on you, it would be, delight in this, delight in this, delight in this. Delight, delight. Look at Psalm 94, Psalm 94. Now, this is my introduction. Psalm 94, look at verse 12. Blessed is the man whom thou dost chasten, O Jehovah, and teaches him out of your Torah, that you may give him rest from the days of adversity until the pit is dug for the wicked. Now that's pretty good. I think all of us want to be taught from the Torah. We should, because we're blessed if we delight in it and we learn and so forth. The Torah, listen, the Torah is so important. It's essential. It is so essential. Now, it's commonly taught, as you know, that the Torah brings a curse, that the Torah puts one in bondage, that, you know, you've heard these things. Now, in my estimation, for what it's worth, there are a lot of false teachings out there. There are a lot of things that are not true. There are a lot of things which are contrary to soundness in terms of God's way. This is the worst. This is the single worst thing. If God says this is delightful and so forth, and that the Torah is true, for someone to say otherwise, it's the worst lie on the planet today. So we have a mission. We've got to change that. Look, Isaiah chapter 2 and Micah chapter 4 describes a time in the future, we're not there yet, where people literally will flow to Jerusalem. Like they'll go to Jerusalem for one thing. They're going to go to hear what? The Torah. The Torah will go forth from Zion and the word of Jehovah from Jerusalem. Now there are going to be a lot of people surprised. You say, wait a minute, you need me to go to Jerusalem to do what? To hear what? To hear the instructions. That's what it's about. Remember, Torah is truth. Torah brings blessing. In fact, there is a curse of the Torah. But guess who gets it? Those who are disobedient. Anytime, there is no exception. If you find an exception, please tell me. I haven't discovered it yet. To keep the Torah brings blessing. The only way you get the curse is disobedience. Now, I can't think of an example otherwise. So if someone says, and we're going to talk about this, if someone tells you, hey, Lyndon, the Torah is a curse. You need to say, well, I love you, but you're wrong, and here's why. You might not say it like that. We'll work on how you approach it. But you understand, you have to go with Scripture. Let God be true, right? Because there are a lot of people with opinions, all right? Now, David, in Psalm 119, verse 97, you can just put this in your notes. He says that the Torah is his meditation all the day, the whole day. Like when he gets up, when he lays down, when he goes about his business, that's what the Torah is supposed to be. We should think about the Torah. It should be our meditation all the day. You say, well, I don't know if I can do that. You will. I promise you, you will. You know, in Deuteronomy 17, there is a clause, basically. It's called a Torah. It's called an instruction. Because instruction, when we talk about Torah, it can mean Genesis through Deuteronomy. But it can also mean a specific instruction. There are Torah, plural, which deal with specific things. There's a Torah of the king. When you go, you know, when you've settled in the land and, you know, here's what's going to happen. This is Deuteronomy 17, beginning in verse 14. God says, when you go into the land that I'll give you, you're going to say, give us a king like the nations. And that's what they do, right? But then it goes on to tell about that king. Now, one of the things the king has to do to make sure he's right, make sure he's in good standing and doing the right thing. All leaders, by the way, need to do this. He's going to write for himself a copy of the Torah. Now, according to tradition, that's the whole Genesis 1 through Deuteronomy. So some would challenge that. I don't know where I fall out on that. I'm open. It could be this specific one because it says the king, you're a king, Shannon. You can't exalt yourself above your brothers. What's good in being a king? You're not over anybody? What kind of job is that? You can't multiply women? It's not fun. You can't multiply horses or silver? You're just kind of one of the guys. But you have this wonderful, wonderful instruction guiding you so that you make sure that you lead the people the right way. Torah. It's very important. Now, very few people see the glory and the beauty in these texts. But I want you to know that when I study, I want you to get in a habit of this. I learned it from one of my teachers, Johnny Powell. He taught me Hebrew. One of the first verses he made me memorize in Hebrew, I hope he's listening today, is Psalm 119, again, verse 18. All right. Now, it says in Hebrew, Gal einai v'avita nifla'ot mitorateha. He says, I remember him when he would teach me this, he'd say, listen, in English it says, open my eyes and I'll look for wonderful things in your Torah. But in Hebrew, Gal means to reveal. He says he understands this, and I trust him on most things related to Hebrew. He spends more time in Hebrew than anyone I ever met. Says it means literally to, like you're asking God, open my eyes, reveal, and then I'll look. So it's two parts. You're asking God, open my eyes, and then you're committing to doing your part by searching. For what? Wonderful things in the Torah. Now, a lot of people don't get that the Torah has wonderful things. This is the word of our Creator. Now, here's something else. Everybody wants to know, what do you got to do to be saved? It was not very good English. What you got to do to be saved? Psalm 19. I love this passage. I'm just going to read verse 7, but go to Psalm 19. I say I am. Verse 8, I guess, in the Hebrew. It says, the Torah of Jehovah is perfect, restoring the soul. Restoring the soul. The testimony of Jehovah is sure, making wise the simple. Now, where it says perfect, perfect means complete. It's from the root tamin. It's this idea of wholeness, completeness. The Torah of Jehovah is complete. It's whole. It's perfect. It can literally convert the soul, as the King James says it. Look, if you begin to internalize and follow and adopt these ways, it will revolutionize your life. It will change everything. Now, we live in a time of famine, I believe. I truly believe this. I quote it all the time in Amos chapter 8, verses 11 and 12. You can just put this in your notes. I'm not going to quote. I'm going to more paraphrase. It says that there is a famine in the land. Not a famine like you go, oh, famine, people are starving. Yes, yeah, they're starving. But not for like bread and water. I mean, they are. They're literally are hungry people too. We can't forget those. But there's another sustenance that I see on the faces of people. I don't know who else does this. I walk through the grocery store and I look at people. I don't claim to have a gift here. I'm just saying you sense oppression. You know what I'm saying? People are just down. And I'm walking around. I had someone ask me after I got fired. They said, why are you happy? I said, well, I just, it's the joy of Jehovah is my strength. And I mean that. Look, there's a joy inside that makes me all but skip. Like I really am that happy all the time. Doesn't mean bad things don't happen, things that we shouldn't be somber about. But there is a joy that can help you through darkness at night, but joy comes in the morning. I want people to feel that. And so when I talk about this famine, people literally, you can see it on their faces, almost like a vision, like people who are, you've seen emaciated faces. If you look spiritually at some people, you see that look. It's sad. They don't know. They would gladly eat if you could help them. So don't forget them. You have to say, come with me and log in to United Israel. I want to, you know, because we want to give them of the food that we have. Deuteronomy chapter 8, in Deuteronomy chapter 8, verses 1 through 3, it's talking about the wilderness. You've been in the wilderness for 40 years, you know, your shoes hadn't waxen old. But here's the thing, it says, and I fed you. See, God took care and maintained everything that the people had miraculously. So he did this for one thing. He said, I want you to remember the entire way in the wilderness, your whole journey through the wilderness. Why? Because I wanted you to know that man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Now, I say to you, I want you to remember your entire journey to this point. Your entire spiritual journey. What you might have thought of as bad, what you might have thought as wasted time, it was part of what you are today. It sustained you. What sustained you? God's voice, God's guidance. See, that's what we're talking about. It's about this famine. You are coming through the famine. You're now in a place where you're taking in the word of Jehovah. Ezekiel 37 actually describes it pretty vividly. You know, the valley of dry bones. He says to Ezekiel, Ezekiel 37, he says, prophesy to the bones. And what does he say? Hear the word of Jehovah. What happens? The bones come together. So it's sustenance. It brings life. Now, this is not the way of the masses. What I'm teaching is not the way of the masses. The joke, someone else said it and I've said it before. Look, if I wanted to get rich, if I wanted to become a famous preacher and preach what everybody else is preaching, we could all do that, right? Just give people what tickles their ear, and I'm through with that, really, really. I tell people, I love being 50. I'm 50 years old. I don't have to do anything. I don't have to please anybody. I really don't. I don't care. I mean, I care. I don't want to sound mean. But what I'm saying is nothing matters to me now in any comparison to getting this right. This is all that matters. Now, the masses are teaching something else. There's a feel-good message. There's a, you know, this tickle-your-ear thing. Shh, nothing. All right, here it is. Go with me to Isaiah chapter 8, the book of Isaiah. See, y'all can't keep me off too long. Isaiah chapter 8. It's a message for our day. We're actually going to talk about the Torah reading today. Maybe. Maybe tomorrow. Now, you're going to learn about white spaces. You will learn this term, I promise you, because this is what I call rightly dividing the word of truth. It's an ancient thing that most people don't know about. But my teacher, James Tabor, taught it to me, and you get to learn it now, and it's so important. People a lot of times will open up a chapter of the Bible, and they'll begin reading at verse 1. They may or may not be at the beginning of a prophetic section or a thought or a... This is where it starts. I want you to go with me to verse 16, all the way down, chapter 8, verse 16, and here is a command. It begins thus, bind up the testimony, seal the Torah among my disciples. Bind up the testimony, seal the Torah among my disciples, and I will wait upon Jehovah that hides his face from the house of Jacob, and I will hope for him. Bind up the testimony. Seal the Torah among my disciples. Now, no burning bushes in my yard, no audible voices, but I feel this is one of my main jobs in life, is to bind up the testimony and to seal the teaching among my disciples. Don't get worried. No messianic pretension here. The idea of a disciple simply means a student, a learner. I'm a disciple. Now, it goes on. Behold, I and the children whom Jehovah has given me are for signs and for portents in Israel from Jehovah of hosts who dwells in Mount Zion. Now, white space. Now listen, here's verse 19. And when they shall say to you, consult the mediums and wizards that chirp and that mutter, shall not a people seek their God? Why seek the living among the dead? To the Torah and to the testimony. If they speak not according to this word, it is because there is no light in them. Listen to me. Get this, if you don't get anything else. If you are listening to someone who is not bringing you with them to the Torah and the testimony, darkness, you need to run. That's what Isaiah said. It's the idea that God is bringing light. See, that's the mission. It's all about the Torah and the testimony. So, understand that going in. Now, a popular lie is that it's too difficult. You just can't do it. You can't help yourself. You go in a restaurant, they have duck, they have chicken, they have pork. I just can't help it. I've got to go. People, and I'm not making fun or treating that lightly. Some people aren't, we're all in different places. My point is that these instructions are not too difficult. We can do them. It comes down to choice. It's always been about choice. God's not going to twist us and make us choose. Moses has been with him for 40 years. You know what his last thing was? I put before you life and blessing, death and cursing. Choose life. The appeal of Torah is that it is a choice. So I encourage people to choose life. Now you think, I don't know if I like that, Ross. He's always telling us to choose life. Who would say that? Who would say that? I want you to get this idea. Look, there is a way that seems right to man. Does God really care about that? He probably doesn't. He's got busier things to do. No, he does. He delights when he knows that we delight in his ways. That's the bottom line. It's not too hard. Deuteronomy chapter 30. Now, these are some of my favorite passages that I'm using in my introduction because I have to make sure, I feel compelled to make sure you have all these together, packaged. Deuteronomy chapter 30, white space, verse 11 through verse 14. All right. We're going to go there. I want you to hear this. Now hear this. Deuteronomy 30. I mentioned Johnny Powell. A lot of times I'll quote Is he on there? Okay, so Johnny, we're going to show it. Tell him relax. Tell him just relax. I'll get off in a minute, Johnny. So a lot of times I'll quote passages. You know, I grew up, my mom's here, and I grew up studying the King James. And so whenever God speaks in my mind, I think it's always King James, right, because I'm used to that text. But so I'll quote sometimes, and Johnny would always say, be careful when you quote. You're talking about something very holy. You could misquote. It's a good point, right? So I'm going to read this, even though I could quote it, because Johnny's watching. This is English, though. For this commandment which I command you this day, it's not hidden from you, neither is it far off. It's not in heaven that you should say, who will go up for us to heaven, bring it to us that we may hear it and do it. Neither is it beyond the sea that you should say, who will go over the sea for us, bring it to us that we may hear it and do it. But the word is very near to you. It's in your mouth and in your heart that you may do it. Here's the whole point of that. It's not too difficult. It's not. It's not too far off. Look, you don't have to, like, it'd be one thing if we're in St. Francisville and we go, man, I sure wish I could learn Torah. I guess I'll have to go to Israel to learn. Some people actually say that. I'll give you a little hint. You know that the Torah wasn't written in Israel? It wasn't. It was written in the desert, no man's land, just to show ultimately that this is a universal message. This message belongs to the world. Now, Israel is a custodian. They've been given a great task, a great mission, to be a light to the nation, a covenant of the people. Ultimately, they are to share this message. Don't put the light and then cover it up with a bushel. You put it on the, stand it up, let people see. The goal, right, in Torah faith is that you and I live our life in such a way that people go, what a great God that must be. I wish I could, can you help me? Could you show me the way? You say, yeah, this is powerful. Let me tell you about the Torah. It's truth. It's so powerful it can convert the soul. It's perfect. See, but this idea that it's too far away, that you have to get somebody from heaven to bring it to you, mm-mm. It's very near to you. It's in your mouth. It's in your heart. To do it, see, that's the key. It's not just a matter of reading it, learning it, right? To keep the Torah, over and over it talks about to keep the Torah. And people say, no one can keep the Torah. Well, technically, that's not true either. In the Torah, the word keep, generally the word translated keep, is from the root word shamar. It means to guard, right? So to guard, you're really supposed to guard the Torah. Now, what does that mean? You're supposed to guard it, meaning that you guard it from intrusion. In other words, it says in Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 2, and chapter 13, verse 1, don't add to or take away from. See, that's the key. We'll get into that in the early chapters of Genesis. See, because from the very beginning, you realize that's the first thing we want to do. We want to add to it and take away. It's not complete. We think it's not. Let me tell you the true, deep secrets of the Torah. Look, run from that kind of stuff, please. It's perfect, converting the soul. Now, one other thing that I think has caused confusion as we go into this study, a lot of people will approach you and say, with the arrival of the new covenant, that has been done away with, set aside, and so forth, okay? Well-meaning people will say this, but the Hebrew Bible does know about the new covenant. It's not like this is some new idea. It's there, right? It's in Jeremiah chapter 31. The new covenant, I have it on the wall here because it's so significant. It is coming. It's not here yet, by the way, though some would challenge me on that. I'll just read it. I'll let the Bible answer the question. Let it decide, not me. Jeremiah 31, because this is important. Go there, Jeremiah 31. And beginning in verse 31, guess what? At a white space. Because it's a thought that needs to stand out. Jeremiah 31, in Hebrew it's verse 30, it says this. Behold, days are coming, says Jehovah, when I will make a new covenant, listen, with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah. Not like the covenant that I made with their fathers when I took them by the hand to lead them out of the land of Egypt, which my covenant they broke, though I was a husband to them, declares Jehovah. But this is the covenant that I will make with them in those days. I will put my Torah, my instructions, in their inward parts and write it on their hearts. Now think about that. The new covenant, what it is, it's the instruction written on the heart. So you go, well, not that, it's a different instruction. Well, let's think about that. God's instructions imparted in such a way, because like we're human, we have our own difficulties and our own troubles, and you know, we're not perfect in that sense, though we're supposed to strive. But this is when God intervenes. Ultimately, he says he'll remember their sins no more. And get this about the new covenant. When it's in its fullness, a man shall not have to tell another man, "Know Jehovah, John, for they shall all know me from the least of them to the greatest." That's when you know. So like right now, do you think everybody knows? No. No. Now, there's a lot of confusion. Some might be disheartened by the confusion, but for me, I see it as a great opportunity. I see it as an opportunity that United Israel sees as an opportunity. We recognize that this is one of the greatest opportunities presented before us. Some people see glass half full, some half empty. I mean, this is the most glorious task that we have before us, is to share a message. You realize Isaiah 45 says this, that ultimately from one end of heaven to the other, that everyone will know Jehovah. The prophets say that the knowledge of God will cover the earth as the waters cover the sea. Think about that image for a minute. You ever been on the ocean? Think about the knowledge of God covering the earth. Like you can't see. Have you ever been so far out, there's no land? That's what we're talking about when we talk about the knowledge of God. It's so fully covering the earth that you can't see anything but the knowledge of God. That's what we're looking for. That's our goal. Now, if we are to remember the Torah of Moses, if one is blessed when their delight is in the Torah, that blessing that's brought about when we meditate therein all day. If the Torah is truth, notice if in Hebrew, im, if it's perfect converting the soul, should we then not study it deeply? That's the question. So when people would question you and say, "Why are you studying the law?" You say, "Wait a minute. Why would you not be joining me to study God's holy instructions? Why would you not want to model your life after that which God says is perfect and able to convert your soul? Why would you not go with what God says is truth?" I mean, it's a fair question, because people don't have to believe like me. But they have every right to ask me questions, and they do. I get them face to face. I get them in email. I get some that are less kind than others. But generally, I try to respond in kindness and say, "Why would you not?" You can ask me, "Why would I? Why would you not?" All right? I think, indeed, we should. And I think that countless souls, it's growing by the day of people who are growing weary and hungry. See, the rest of Isaiah 8, where I quoted or paraphrased verse 11, verse 12 says this, says they're going to run to and fro seeking the Word of God. They really are looking. I mean, I believe that. I think people are, they're hungry. It only takes the right teaching, the right message to get out there. And I believe, this is what I believe, that when someone finds themselves doing God's work, I have to believe that God will bring more people to that. I believe that. And if it's not, now I don't believe it's, you know, in my mind, I don't see a mega synagogue, as we would call it. That's not it so much, because it does talk about few, you know, it's like a remnant. But boy, that remnant, if they have the testimony sealed, the Torah sealed among the disciples, I think that's what's going to change the world. I really do. Now, the instructions of Moses contain within them instructions for instruction, right? That sounds kind of interesting, right? In other words, how would I impart the instructions to a group of disciples should I set forth to do it? I mean, how? What would you do? Well, in Deuteronomy 31, let's go there. Deuteronomy chapter 31. This is instructions for imparting instructions. Deuteronomy 31, verse 10. I'm going to give you the broad category for how this is done, and then we're going to talk about how we implement that in a practical way. And Moses commanded them, saying, Deuteronomy 31:10, at the end of every 7 years in the time of the year of release. Don't you just love how Jehovah, every 7 years, all debts that you start over at 7 years, it's just clean slate, back to what you got. In the year, in the time of the year of release, in the Feast of Booths, we still have our booth up. So we're going to take it down. We're not going to leave it up year-round like some people leave certain holiday decorations. We will take it down. But it is. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. I hate to take it down because it's a reminder of when God had his people dwelling in booths, right? So I look out at night when I'm up here. Now, it's during the Feast of Booths. When all Israel's come to appear before Jehovah your God in the place which he shall choose, you shall read this Torah, HaTorah Hazot, before all Israel in their hearing. Gather the people together, men, women, children, your stranger that is within your gates, that they may hear and that they may learn and fear Jehovah your God and guard to do all the words of this Torah, and that their children who've not known anything may hear and learn to fear Jehovah your God as long as you live in the land, whether you go over the Jordan, to possess it. Now, this contains within it an interesting methodology, if you will. Notice that the method reaches even those who've not known anything, right? We have questions like, what do we do? What about our kids? You know, I brought them up in a different, you know, how do I convey this to them? Well, that was an obvious question. It's not just new. Like, religious organizations go, what do we do with the kids? You realize that everything, this is why it's so important for me to build a community, because I love kids. If I can instill in someone a love for God, a love for the Bible, put me with a group of kids and let me try it. Now, I'm not saying I did perfect with mine. Well, I was all over the map. I was in a quest for a long time. Now I'm trying to gather up the sparks, as they say, right? But here's the deal. Bring yours. Bring yours. I got it now. I'll do it. I'll do it. Because here, you know, it's funny when God in Genesis 18, when he's talking about, should I tell Abraham what I'm about to do? Yes, because Abraham will become a great and mighty nation. And he'll teach his family and his household after him to keep, to guard the way of Jehovah, to do justice and righteousness. We get God's thoughts there. He's not speaking out loud. In the Torah, it says, God says, I'm going to do this because Abraham is going to teach his children. It's all about passing it to the next generation. I have some great visions. I don't know if I live to be 100, if I could see them all come to pass, but maybe someone else can. Maybe some, last week we had Nick here, you know, Nick Smith. I love this young guy. My first memory of him, he was reading a Torah scroll he just turned 16. Who knows if he's not going to say, hey, I'm going to move to St. Francisville and I'm going to learn this stuff, and he might be the next, or it might be someone else's, or maybe one of my kids or one of my grandkids. It doesn't have to be patrilineal. It doesn't have to be someone related to me. We're looking for young people who will internalize this message and stand up and begin to proclaim and teach and preach. The world needs to hear it. But here's what the method does. By listening, and I've taught on this before, you'll get it more and more and more as we work through the Torah. Listen, learn, guard, do. That's the process. You listen. Don't jump in and do anything yet. Just listen. You're going to learn it. You're going to guard it, not add to, not take away. And then you're going to do it. That doesn't stop you from doing as you understand, but you get the point. It's a process. Now, the result is that they will hear and they'll learn to fear. Fear, in the sense of awesome reverence, and it can be very close to fear, like you think, you know, scary fear. That idea is the beginning of wisdom. Right? Remember, we talked about that. So every 7 years, now we're getting into, that was my introduction. Oh, yeah. So every 7 years. Now, what came out of that? Because you have to, how do you do that practically? Do you wait and at the set, well, you at least need to do that every 7 years. Now, what Judaism came up with, what we have now from antiquity, are two methods. One is the annual cycle of readings. That annual cycle of readings is very effective in that. We've done this for years. We taught this for years. I have probably 8 years worth of audio and video files of working through the Torah a section at a time. And that's practiced very widely by normative Judaism. In other words, if you went to any synagogue anywhere in the world, not any, most standard Jewish synagogues, they would be reading today, in fact, they would be reading the Parsha, the section of text called Noah. So you could go in, you could go like, man, I hadn't been to synagogue in a long time, honey, I think we ought to go today. And you could look at your handy calendar and go, okay, well, they're going to be talking about Noah. Let's study it in case they ask any questions. You could stay up, right? You would know. And that's a good way to do it. Great commentaries are written. I'm not here to suggest otherwise. Wonderful things. Many brilliant, brilliant people, far more sharp than I am, have spent thousands of years working on this instructional method. All the respect in the world for that method. There are 54 of those readings. It comprises of about 6 chapters. Now, Dave, I'm gonna ask everybody. This is kind of a different thing because we've got room to do some things. Can you, if everybody gets up with me and comes over to the table, I want to show people what 6 chapters looks like in the Scripture. I want to just kind of show you. If you'll come over here. Yeah, you come back over here in a minute. This is just, I just do this to get you up because everybody might be asleep by now. You can stretch. Now, we'll just leave a little bit so the camera can. Okay. Look at these white spaces. Dave, can you zoom in? If I turn it like this, does that help? Or look, Sherry, can you move this chair? Look at the screen. I want to show people this. Just kind of pull that completely out of the way if you could. Now, this is the Torah scroll that was given to us by United Israel to take care of. This scroll, you heard the story last week. Ralph Bunton told the story. He and James, representing the executive board, gave this to our congregation. But this particular scroll comes from the 1890s in Calcutta, India. It's a beautiful scroll. I read the portion from this scroll personally as I studied. I want to do this the whole way through. Now, so the Torah begins right to left. So you would begin here. It begins, Bereshit bara Elohim et hashamayim ve et haaretz. It goes on. This is the Torah portion. In the beginning, God created and so forth. Or in beginning, at the first. Now, so this represents Genesis 1:1 all the way. And then you get over here. And the first Torah portion, which was last week in Jewish synagogues, is called Bereishit, in beginning. It goes from Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, all the way over here, down to Genesis chapter 6, verse 8. This week, in most synagogues, it begins here, Ele toldot Noach, Noach ish tzadik tamim. This is the Torah portion about Noah. It says, these are the generations of Noah. Noah was a righteous man. Wait a minute. I didn't think anybody was righteous. Anyway, we'll get to that later. We'll get to that later. Now, so what I want to do, though, is I want to show you, this is 5.5 columns of text. Now, look how much we have left, Dave. That's a lot of scroll there. We've got several years to work through this. But what I want you to know is, we, as a congregation, as a group, are going to work through at a little bit slower pace. Not because I think you're slower, but because I want us to really, really get into this. Now, is everybody up for this? Because here's what we're going to do. We're going to go from, this represents roughly a chapter, and we're going to go to about right here. Notice, that's all we're going to cover. So I have time to run my mouth or whatever, and then we're going to just go to, but actually we're going to go through this and we're going to talk about some of the key ideas. People are welcome to participate. I want the dialogue to change as a result of that. Okay, so I wanted to show that contrast. Now, you can go back and we'll take, now that you've stretched, everybody's awake now? I wanted to just take that and show people the difference between the annual and the triennial, make a couple of points about both. The annual cycle of reading was developed in Babylon. Now, I know a lot of people, anytime they hear Babylon, they go, oh, come out of Babylon. That's not what I'm doing. Much wisdom came out of Babylon, right? I've heard this before. But what I want to do is, I want to stress that we know from our ancient sources that that system of cycle of readings, the annual cycle of readings, 54 in all, came from Babylon. Just historically, it's documented. You can see that. The other system, which I'm going to be using, was taught in the land of Israel. All right? Some would say it makes it better. I happen to love this cycle of readings, both the annual and the triennial, but my heart is with the triennial. It took approximately 3 to 3.5 years to work through the Torah when you follow the triennial cycle. That's why it's called triennial, basically. But it's not quite 3 years per se. There was some fluidity, if you will, in the way that this was gone through in antiquity. It wasn't so much what scholars believe now is that it wasn't so nailed down, say, in the Second Temple period. So like you could go into a synagogue and you wouldn't necessarily know they were going to be reading Genesis 1:1 through 2:3. However, they did at an early date begin to preach and teach according to this cycle, and we have evidence from antiquity of some of these ancient sermons. So my disclaimer, and this is mainly because for years now I've wanted to do this, and my good friend and teacher James has said, let's really think about this. We've had a good dialogue about it. And one of the reasons we haven't done this cycle is because we said we need to show solidarity and stand in concert with the Jewish people. And I believe that. I think we should in some regards. But here's what I know. The group that I feel led to reach are not those who have a good understanding necessarily of all things Torah. Now, you all do. All of you are full of this. But I'm talking about the people, not you listening either. I'm talking about other people who don't quite have it all figured out. We want to bring them in And so this year, when we talked about it, James and I and others, I said, I'm hesitant to say beyond this way, I feel compelled to teach this. I feel driven. I feel led to teach it this way. And so you get to participate in this, and I think it's going to be amazing. I believe that those who are now waking up to the Torah's relevance require a careful study, not because they're slower, but because they've been separated from the Torah. So I think there is a special need to get in and get deep and take our time. You can do all those. Get in, get deep, take your time. And the pace of the triennial cycle is more fitting for my purposes, or if I could be so bold as to say his purposes. Because that's really, if Jehovah doesn't build the house, then they that labor in vain. So if this is about my dream or my bit, it has to have more than me. So I think that the the cycle we're going to, this 3.5 year cycle, in a lot of ways is interesting because I believe I've done more study in this than any other subject matter probably. I've got a file that's this thick on this subject, the triennial cycle. In rabbinic literature, I'll say this, there are places where the rabbis would say the world was created in Tishri, like the seventh month. And then there another rabbi would say it was created in Aviv or Nisan. It's like the opposite. It's like the spring. Well, how would they both even consider that? Why would they both be? So some just say, they argue, two rabbis, two opinions. Actually, what I think was happening is if you begin the cycle, this cycle, in the spring, you go for 3.5 years, you conclude in the fall, you begin again. If you're reading that and you're a rabbi, you go, the world was created in Tishri. If you then go 3.5 years, you're in the spring, you start again, you go, in the beginning, God created the world in the spring. You see, I think that both 3.5 year, if we went through this twice, we would in effect work through what in Hebrew is called the Shemitah cycle, the 7 year cycles, and you would be providing two witnesses. A 7 year period is pretty important. And for some reason, I feel like some people would go, well, is this actually that cycle? I have no idea. I'm not smart enough. I don't know the math well enough. I've never been good at math. It's just a gut thing. I think it's time. I want to go through this, and I want to go through it using this cycle. We have one model for teaching on the Sabbath in the Torah. And it's from the book of Nehemiah, as we say in the South, chapter 8, verses 1 through 8. And I'll basically tell you what goes on there. Ezra is reading. He reads from the scroll. He's in front of the people. And then after he reads, he gives them understanding so that they might understand the scripture, basically. It's a beautiful story. Now, I want to use that model because I love things biblical. And you go, well, you didn't use that today. You talked for an hour already. But now I want you to get that what I want to do is I think we read it, then we discuss it. And we'll take a little break. But one of the recommendations, because people log in from all over and they're like, you take this long break to eat and it's horrible for the video. We're going to move right into this. And then people can eat while they go, and, so that's fun. But here's the thing. Nehemiah 8, and I tell you what it does, it literally leads to revival. That's the beautiful thing, because the people hear it. See, that's what Deuteronomy 31 said. If you read it to everyone, men, women, children, so forth. So that's going to be the order of the service. Now, you have to know about some special treats associated with this study. Things that you're going to get as a part of this that other groups don't get. And here's the first. Some of you know and have heard of what we called the Original Bible Project sometime back. James was leading as the chief editor right before he was placed in a position at his university where he was a chair of religious studies, which involves having literally dozens and dozens of religious professors reporting to you. And he was in the busiest time of his life and writing books. But he started working on this translation. Now, here's the thing about the translation. You're going to hear a lot about this. The translation itself is actually called the Transparent English Bible. Now, there's a website that is being developed now, even as I speak, called TransparentEnglishBible.com. And you can go and read about the methodology, but here's what that translation does. How many of you have ever picked up an English Bible? You all have them in your possession here and listening in. And you said, I wonder how close this is. Because some are more fluid, like they might be what we call a dynamic equivalent and more a living Bible, and it's sort of paraphrased. Some are more literal. Here's what I want you to know. I want to bring you as closely as I can to what does it say, right? Here's what a lot of people say. I've had discussing doctrinal points, and someone will say, well, I don't believe that. Well, you don't have to believe it. And that they'll say, I had one guy, I'll tell you the story, a good friend of mine was a Jehovah's Witness, and he said, hey, Ross, you study Hebrew. Can you tell me what this says? And he points to a verse, and I said, what do you mean? He said, in the Hebrew. So I looked at the Hebrew of that verse, and I translated it very literal. And he said, that's not what that says. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, that's not what my translation says. I said, that's not what you ask me. You ask me what the Hebrew says. Now, if your translation lines up with that, that's great. If it doesn't, now here's what happens in translation. A lot of times, a lot of baggage gets carried over from the Hebrew to the English. So things that you want it to say, you got the pen, baby, make it say it. That's what translators do. What I want to do is not that. I tell you, I'm 50. I don't care about what somebody wants me to. I want to know what does it say. Yes. Now, we'll talk about what it means or what we think it means. That's a different question. But let's not jump there before we know what it says. If you approach the Bible saying it says what you think it says, you may or may not be right. Proverbs chapter 30, verse 6. That it basically says, if you add to God's word, you'll be found to be a liar. So be careful on that. Now, the Transparent English Bible. The goal of this, you read all about it, but here's what it does. It's like if you, imagine this. If you could take an English Bible, and let's say it was print. You know what a transparency is? Remember those? How you would print, you'd make a copy and you'd shine it up on an overhead? Here's the idea. You're looking at the English and you're peering through and you're seeing what the Hebrew actually says. This is so, we're trying to do this, I say we. James is a translator and I'm like the helper guy. I can help some and that's what I want to do. But the idea is that you're looking at, I want it to look like, feel like, sound like the original. Now, sometimes in English, that comes across a little bit awkward, you know, for our English. I'll give you an example. Do you know in English, it is saying the river went east of Eden, whatever? Rivers don't went in Hebrew. It says the river walked. Now, what does that mean? If it says vegetation grew in some translations, Tabor's translation says, and a sprout sprouted. Creepers creep. Flyers fly. You go, well, that sounds... No, in our... Oh, come on. People might have said this. You know, come on, Ross. That's too... No, that's the beauty. I want to feel it. Now, here's what changes people's lives. This is what I think... A lot of people are saying, come on, Lord, bring that revival. And I think he's already stated it's going to happen when you listen, you learn, you internalize. But see, there's something about hearing that Torah read. Week by week, Sabbath by Sabbath, right? Lyndon and I have become the moon watchers. We're tracking this thing, right? 2 months in a row. Others have helped.
We're going to get a reputation.
We are. I know it. I know it. That's right. So we're watching the calendar. We want to know, are we in sync? I want to get us in sync with that too. So what we're going to do is, as part of this, Each week, I called James and I said, you know, it'd be really great if we can do this triennial cycle and we can use your translation. It's only a chapter and a half, maybe. I'm going to read you that translation. I'm going to read it, and then we're going to talk about it. We're going to discuss what does it mean, right? So here's the thing. This is it's going to be powerful because James said, yes, absolutely, I think that's a great idea. By the way, we've got, I keep saying we, James has translated quite a bit of this. Genesis is totally complete. Exodus is pretty complete, I think. But it's not just that he stopped there. He's worked on other sections from the prophets and the writings. There's a lot done. We're just continually, and I thought about this. If this takes 3.5 years, you realize Genesis is 45 weeks. We could actually be working on it and releasing it week by week by week. So you're going to get to download. Here's what I recommend. I have this beautiful binder. You can buy them at Walmart, Office Depot, whatever, a couple of dollars. I have produced a chart that you can find on our website. Things that aren't on our website will be very soon. We have our wonderful website designer who's helping us put these documents up. This chart covers, I'm not going to get into the details of it yet. I'm going to do a special video about it. But this covers all the ancient readings. And you'll be able to keep up with, this week Ross is talking about Genesis 1:1 through 2:3. Next week, 2:4 through 3:22, so forth and so on. And it gives the ancient prophet reading associated therewith, right? So you get to see, what were they doing in the land of Israel 2,000 years ago? This is the cycle. This is the cycle. You'll also get a copy, a document called A Reader's Guide to the Hebrew Bible, and it just explains the certain special things about this translation. How many times does the word God appear in the Hebrew Bible? Zero. Zero. In the Hebrew, God is an English word that is used to represent a Hebrew idea. In Hebrew, generally, it's Elohim. We're going to talk about that. By the way, those of you who participated in the quiz this week, I posted, how many times does Elohim appear? Genesis 1:1 through 2:3? 34 times. It's 34. That's the correct answer. Everybody that got it wrong, go back now and change it on Facebook so you can act like you knew. It's like grading your own paper in school. You just kind of fix it. Don't nobody know. I'm not encouraging that, by the way. So, having said that, I encourage you to go read about this translation. And after you hear it read, we're going to move to the table and discuss some of these things. Maybe take some comments from outside and inside, whoever wants to. You don't have to, because we're going to talk. Now, here are some rules. I want us to stay on topic. Kind of hard, right? Because people want to go, well, brother, I want to know what about the last days and the book of Zechariah. If it relates to the reading, let's focus on the reading, right? Is that fair? Now, don't jump to conclusions either. Think about it this way. You all know the Bible. I'm teaching teachers. This is a hard thing, believe it or not. I'm not talking to people who don't know the Bible. I'm talking to people who've given their life to seek God, people who have real life experiences. You've encountered God in your life. And I'm telling you, don't go there yet. Here's why. I want you to approach the biblical text as if you're falling in love again. Like you don't know what's around the next corner. Please, can you try to do this? I'm not saying suspend everything you've learned, but I am. Because I want it to feel, this is the thought that came to me. I just give it to you like I feel it. Imagine you've been with somebody a long time and you want to rekindle that. Work hard at it. It takes effort. I want you to do that. I want you to think about, I love the Word of God. I want to get that back. The only way you can do that is take it slow, deliberate. Deliberate's a good word. So, avoid jumping ahead. Now, Having said all of that, I want you to hear the reading of the Torah, Genesis 1:1 through 2:3, according to the transparent English Bible. And I always start before I read with this in mind. It's that verse from Psalm 119:18. Gal enai v'avita niflaot mitorah teka. Open my eyes, and I will look for wonderful things from your Torah. So, if you don't have this translation, stay tuned. This translation, I believe, I honestly believe, is going to change the lives of millions of people. Because for the first time, I believe this, there is going to be a translation which gives it as it is. There's no theological baggage here. If it says Elohim in the Hebrew, it says Elohim here. Here we go. I will say one other thing. Genesis is the English title for the first book. In Hebrew, books are named, this is in the footnote, by the way, Hebrew books are named for the first significant word in the first passage. And so we get the name of Genesis in the Hebrew means it's Bereshit. Bereshit literally is translated at first, or in beginning, you might say. But so I'm going to read it. This is Bereshit, and here is the reading of the Torah for today. At the first of Elohim creating the skies and the land was desolation and emptiness, and darkness was over the face of the deep. The Spirit of Elohim was hovering over the face of the waters. And Elohim said, "Let there be light," and it was light. And Elohim saw the light that it was good. And Elohim separated between the light and between the darkness. And Elohim called to the light, day. And to the darkness he called night. And it was evening and it was morning, day one. And Elohim said, "Let there be an expanse in the middle of the waters, and let there be a separating between waters to waters." And Elohim made the expanse, and he separated between the waters that were from under the expanse and between the waters that were from upon the expanse, and it was thus. And Elohim called to the expanse, skies. And it was evening, and it was morning, a second day. And Elohim said, "Let the waters under the skies be gathered toward one place, and let the dry land be seen." And it was thus. And Elohim called to the dry land, land. And to the collection of the waters he called seas. And Elohim saw that it was good. And Elohim said, "Let the land sprout the sprout, a plant seeding seed, a fruit tree making fruit, according to its type, its seed within it upon the land." And it was thus. And the land made the sprout go out, a plant seeding seed according to its type, and a tree making fruit, its seed within it according to its type. And Elohim saw that it was good. And it was evening and it was morning, a third day. And Elohim said, "Let there be lights in the expanse of the skies to separate between the day and between the night. And they will be for signs and for appointed times and for days and years. And they will be for lights in the expanse of the skies to make light upon the land." And it was thus. And Elohim made the two large lights, the large light for the rule of the day, the small light for the rule of the night, and the stars. And Elohim gave them in the expanse of the skies to make light upon the land, and to rule in the day and in the night, and to separate between the light and between the darkness. And Elohim saw that it was good, and it was evening and it was morning, a fourth day. And Elohim said, let the waters swarm a swarm of living life breathers, and let the flyer fly upon the land, upon the face of the expanse of the skies. And Elohim created the large water beast and every living life breather that moves about, with which the waters swarm according to their type, and every winged flyer according to its type. And Elohim saw that it was good. And Elohim blessed them, saying, bear fruit and be abundant, and fill the waters in the seas, and let the flyer be abundant in the land. And it was evening and it was morning, a fifth day. And Elohim said, let the land make a living life breather go out according to its type, animal and moving thing and living thing of the land according to its type. And it was thus. And Elohim made the living thing of the land according to its type, and the animal according to its type, and every moving thing of the soil according to its type. And Elohim saw that it was good. And Elohim said, let us make soil creature in our image, according to our likeness, and let them govern in the fish of the sea, and with the flyer of the skies, and in the animals, and in all the land, and in every moving thing that moves out about upon the land. And Elohim created the soil creature in his image. In the image of Elohim created him. Male and a female he created them. And Elohim blessed them. And Elohim said to them, bear fruit and be abundant and fill the land and subdue and govern in the fish of the sea, in the flyer of the skies, and in every living thing that moves about upon the land. And Elohim said, look, I've given to you every plant seeding seed that is upon the face of all the land, and every tree in which there is a fruit of a tree seeding seed, to you it will be an eatable thing. And to every living thing of the land, and to every flyer of the skies, and to every moving thing about on the land that in it is living life breath, every green plant is for an eatable thing. And it was thus. And Elohim saw all that he had made, and look, it was exceedingly good. And it was evening, and it was morning, the sixth day. And the skies, and the land, and all their company were finished. And Elohim finished on the seventh day his work that he did, and he ceased on the seventh day from all his work that he did. And Elohim blessed the seventh day, and he set it apart, because on it he ceased from all his work that Elohim created to do.